of silence and then pledge allegiance to the flag. This is out here. We'll stand. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, welcome to our monthly committee of the whole meeting. At this time, we would have time set aside for citizens' comments. Were there any residents that wish to address the board? Okay. And if you would come to the microphone and state your name, where you reside.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Paul Lanier. I reside in East Earl here. And my children do attend the Garden Spot School District. What I'd like to say, number one, is I really appreciate the school board, the administration, and also the staff for creating a very safe environment for education for all the children, and especially I speak for my own. This year was actually a very special year for us, but also a very hard year for our middle school boy. He had a hard time adjusting in middle school, and guidance counselors did an incredible job of addressing that. They were a strength to him, and they just made him feel welcome and brought him to where he is today. So we value that so much. That is just amazing. So I'd also like to pray for you as well. Lord, we just thank you for today. We thank you for the gift of life. We thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. We thank you for all those that are involved in the school board, the administration, and the staff. Lord, we pray your blessing. We thank you, Lord, for their talents and putting the right people in the right place. Lord, this school district is doing so well. We thank you for that. But we also pray for improvement in any areas that need to be done, Lord. But Lord, we just thank you for your protection. And again, I pray your blessing on each one of the people that work in the school district, all the way to the janitors, to the coaches, to everybody. Lord, we thank you for your blessing and protection. So we give this night to you. We turn it over to you. And we all want to honor you. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, and especially for the nice comments. Appreciate it. All right. I have properties. We have personnel. I have it highlighted. You and Dr. Larkin had something to say first.
I do. As you probably know, we have revised the personnel report. We had a teacher on twice, so we naturally lessened the teacher number for next year. And we also added a new position that Mrs. Martin will be talking to you about. I have been working with Mrs. Martin pretty diligently for close to a year now, saying that we have a very, very, very strong special education program that needed a little more administrative support. And so she finally agreed with me, and we have brought somebody on that was on our staff, I want to say for a very long time, but that doesn't mean she's old in any way, shape, or form. But I'd like Mrs. Martin to introduce you to Laura Jordan.
This is Laura Jordan. She has been with us in the district since December of 1998. Special education teacher, also role of special education consultant for the last number of years with us. And in reference to the prayer of having the right people in the right spots, in the right positions, I truly believe with all my heart that this is the right position for Laura, guiding us as assistant supervisor, special education and gifted services. It is a position that has been needed, and maybe it's been nudging me. I've been concerned with taking the support Laura has been providing in the classroom, but she will still be doing that just in a different capacity. And we're very, very lucky to have a board that supports our special education program the way that all of you do. So thank you, and we're excited to have Laura join us.
You wouldn't know just how long I've been around. I started at Carnarvon Elementary.
Thank you. Thank you for that, and welcome to the new position. Any other comments? Okay, I'll be back on. As far as the agenda here, we do need to approve the personnel report. So, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second. favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The personnel report is approved. And we'll move on to property and services. Mr. Ramsey.
Okay, thank you. We have several action items for next Monday night. The first one is to approve, to enter the approval letter from PDE, CanCon Park K, for the two notes, the 2014A and the 2015 notes that we issued, to refund the 2010A. In essence, what PlanCon Park K does is just assigns, takes the 2010A project reimbursable percentage and assigns it to the notes that we funded those bonds. So we just continue to get the reimbursement as we have in the past. The next action item is the approval of the trash removal contract to Eagle Disposal for a period of 5 years, beginning July 1st, 2015. Attached is a document. We received three proposals, and the incumbent, if you will, which was Lancaster County Solid Waste Authority, was one of the highest, as you can see. When you look at the five-year savings over 5 years, it's in excess of almost $21,000. So Eagle is a local vendor, and they service the borough and some other individuals and companies very well. So we look forward to our partnering with them going forward. So I would ask that we award the trash removal contract to Eagle for a period of 5 years. The next action item, we are just coming off a three-year agreement with STS, Substitute Teacher Services, for our substitute teachers as well as our classroom assistants. For the period of 3 years, they did not increase their fee at all. They are looking at keeping the substitute teacher's fee markup keep it the same as current. They're not making any change for the next 2 years, but they are looking at increasing the markup for the assistants about 3.5%. Again, that will stay consistent for the next 2 years. We've been very well served. I know Kara can attest to that. It's taken a lot of time and work off her plate. I know it's taken a lot of time and work off our plate in the payroll and personnel department, having about 120 individuals come off our payroll and go to SDS.
Are there any is that a competitive, or are there other companies that are offering that type of service in the area, or is it pretty much kind of a niche in the market?
I know on the substitute end, when we first partnered with them, they had a pretty good niche in the county as well as in schools. I know there are other. I've been getting, now that with the Obamacare and Affordable Care Act, I know we've been getting a lot more emails of companies that are looking to get into this line of business. When we looked at the owner, Jay Godwin, of this substitute service, it's amazing the basically how he looked at the staff as family and really did his best to really make them feel part of the company. At this point, we happy with their services, all the staff they currently have, so we weren't looking at doing anything differently. There are some out there, but I would say they're not as fine-tuned or have enough experience as a substitute teacher service. So, what do you share?
I could add too. I see where you're going with an RFP potentially. I think it's too soon for that.
Yeah, and maybe in 2 years.
I think in a couple of years when there's some other companies that are reasonable. Because I ask around a lot, and I'm asked. In fact, I was at Bassett Board of Governors last Thursday, Friday, and your county superintendents are asking me, and they're saying, we've got nothing like what you're describing in terms of relationship and capability. And I asked folks in the East who've done it, and they've had some problems. So I've got friends all over. We're not there yet, but and I hear we're going with it. And I think in 2 years it would be appropriate.
Just make a note that we
leave. Yeah, this will put us in for 5 years.
Yeah.
So I think we do have a chance. I think that gives an opportunity for other companies to ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2 years, we'll see where we are. And
I think one of the key pieces that SDS has done as well is put the SDS coordinator on site here at the school. Dawn Hare serves in that capacity, who was a paraeducator under us as the school district. And Dawn has connections with all the administrators. We talk probably daily, and she knows the district well. And so that morning hour shuffle of staff when people are calling in has just been a key to making sure that the students are supported.
How are we doing? I know it's a struggle for everybody with finding substitutes and staffing.
She's done pretty well, special education-wise, because we're able to look to our teachers there to email her when there's absences. So then we've all been trying to shuffle staff from within classes, and they travel to other schools. She manages all of that portion.
We're still continuing to have the difficulties with teacher substitutes, particularly on certain days, especially now, Fridays. People are using their personal days, especially this next Friday, because we're in competition with everyone else. And all of the school districts are having the same issues.
Yeah, I knew it is. And it's not specific. I'm just curious.
It really is. We try very carefully not to schedule pull-out days on Mondays and Fridays because of the folks tend to take a three-day weekend when they can. We're trying some other incentives, including an increase in pay, which hasn't been increased in almost 15 years.
That was kind of my next question.
We don't expect that to do a whole lot right away, but we also realize that we can't go 15 years without seeing something, and we don't want to go over 15 and leave that problem for someone else. So we do need to hype that up a little bit. The IU did a great job. They hosted a fair. I don't know if Mr. Irvin will talk about that here within the last month or 5 weeks or so to recruit. So they're doing some recruiting for us, no one can figure out exactly what the problem is. The economy is picking up, and there's people are getting full-time jobs.
Early in the year, we got a letter, an email from Jay Gottman. I mean, it's a industry problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I mean, like 35% just in their substitute pool. So, I mean, but we've done, as Dr. Osh said, we've done some things. We've changed some of the guidelines and this whole sub process to try to speed up the process, and I think that's helped. But I think it's just the process.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions? The last item for action that I have is the approval of the Lancaster-Lebanon Intermediate Unit General Operating Budget and the Instructional Material Services Budget for the 15-16 school year. I did attach a copy of it. You will see that the core programs and services. The IU does a tremendous job keeping that at the base index increase each year, which is 1.9%. There is no district assessment for this budget. It's absorbed within some of their other programs. And the one that we are receiving assessment on or a fee is the Instructional Media Services budget. That reflects a 0% increase, and there's no change in our contributions this year. And I think that's been many years before we've seen that. Kudos to them for continuing to be good stewards and trying to keep our increases to the minimum, basically zero. So it's great. We'll ask for approval on that next month. Okay, moving into the information items, the first one that I wanted to kind of give the board an update on is the Blue Ball parking lot. You can see the project schedule, which is attached. Which we updated the end of March. Sorry. Our plan is based on the timing of the meetings with the township. We actually had one last week. We had a meeting there, and Jim Hocker, Neil, and myself attended. Mr. Hocker did present the proposal. The committee was very supportive. Basically saying that it's about time. Their big concern was the runoff, if there's going to be any expanded runoff from what's running off there into that basin, if you will, and then parking lot, so there'll be no additional drainage than what's coming there. So I think we're able to accommodate their needs. You'll see that the final approval, we're hoping to make the June 9th meeting, but depending on what some of the comments are, maybe the July 14th. But we're still planning on having the bids presented and awarded at the July 20th meeting. And then get started, and it will be sometime in the fall when we finish it up. So, any questions on that? The last information item that I have is just an update on budget. If you would open the attachment, Jeff, if you don't mind. The first page is really a summary. If we roll the clocks back a little bit, back to February, at our committee meeting, we did adopt a preliminary budget of just under $1.3 million, which would have required a 4.38% tax increase to balance that budget. To date, we have a deficit reduction of just over $244,000, which brings us to our current deficit of just over $1 million. If we were to balance that with tax increase, it would be just over 3.5%. And remember that our index is 1.9 or 545,000. So if we went to the index, we would still have a difference of just under $500,000. Keep in mind, this does not include the governor's budget. If the governor were to get his wishes, we would see an additional $322,551 between basic ed and special ed. And this also doesn't include any usage of fund balance. If you remember, we put in just over $1 million for technology, which you'll see later. There's about $260,000 that we're increasing our technology budget this coming year to get into our cycle so that we have a 1-to-1 from 1 through 12 and get a 4-year replacement cycle. And then also the PEASERS reserve still, and that's about $565,000 for the budget this year. So if we wanted to do some of that, use some of that fund balance we could to get to the index. So that's the summary, but then the next two pages, if you go to the next page, Jeff, this really shows you our expenditure adjustments so far. Our total salary adjustments are just over $179,000 decrease. That includes some additional days for the 10-month administrators. We have two, one we just promoted, if you will, and we have another one, a curriculum, with 215 days, looking at giving them some additional days through the summer to take care of some of the additional needs that, that they had from the educational side. We also had a Title I deficit, about just over $100,000, that working with Nadine and Greg Fredericks, we were able to shift some teachers into some of the open positions without reducing too much of the support to be able to eliminate that deficit. We also had 5 additional teacher retirements. This was net of replacements. We also this year hired an elementary gifted teacher at just under 0.5, looking at increasing that position to a full-time position. There's a need with the increased demand in our special ed program for additional school psychologists. Our homeschool visitor, Kathy Kuhn, is retiring this year, and we're looking at not replacing that position. And we are looking at adding 2 additional elementary STEM, actually a new program, a STEM program. It's actually going to be 3 total teachers, 1 at each elementary, but we have a current employee that we're going to shift into that third and not replace his position. So it's a net of 2, but we will have a total of 3, 1 at each elementary. Really, it's going to replace a lot of the computer lab assistants that they had. We had a part-time maintenance position that retired. We're not going to replace that individual. And Dr. Larkin's secretary, administrative assistant, retired, and we're not going to replace that position either. Mr. Johnson's going to pick up some of those duties. So those total adjustments net is just over $179,000. Benefits, when you take a look at the taxes, the FICA, the PEASERS, and the workers' comp on that, that That's gross, not net. The net piece of the state reimbursement will happen on the revenue side. You're just over $38,000. Contracted services, we had a student, especially a student that needed a nurse with him. We're looking, fortunately, this individual, the student, the parents are now going through the access program, and that's being paid through that program, so we're able to eliminate that nurse position in the classroom. So that's going to eliminate just over $60,000. I did mention about the technology and equipment adjustments. That total budget is going to go up just over $260,000. The net decrease on the expenditure side is just over $17,600. And if you go to the third page, I briefly go through the revenue side. We've seen an uptick a little bit on our real estate taxes. Looking at this point, conservative $25,000 increase. I still have money set aside for that potential big assessment appeal, which at this point is still in the discussion phases. I know our appraiser has been out to appraise the property and we're waiting their report. So I do have some money sitting aside for that. Depending on what happens with that, we could see some additional increases there. Tuition from other districts, a lot of our special ed classes, looking at about a 5% increase next year. That brings about $100,000. That brings us up to about $2.3 million of money coming in from other districts to help offset our costs. The last item, the earned income tax, going up another $100,000. Really taking a look at, right now, about $3 million. As you know, $3 million is where the Tax Bureau is projecting us for next year. As you know, last year, 2 years ago, we were 3.2. We jumped up to 3.4. In talking with them, a lot of that was one-time monies and really getting the back years cleaned up. So they only anticipate us having that going forward. But again, I continually to monitor each month. They're trending pretty well. And my hopes is to have some more updates between now and final adoption. On the local revenue side, our total local revenues increased $225,000. On the state side, as you'll see, I didn't put anything in with the governor's budget, so more to kind of really more to come on that. Transportation, $20,000 increase, and then our Social Security and retirement reduction because our gross benefits went down. The 1/2 the state share is a reduction as well. So when you take a look at the combined local and state, we're looking at about just over $226,500, and that's where you get your net reduction of about $244,000. So at this point, we're going in the right direction. We've been able to absorb or help to fund some pretty many new staff positions, which is great. So I guess at this point, it's just really an update. I'll take questions or comments or a direction from the board, if you will. But pretty much, we keep looking at this every day. So.
Thank you, Mr. Ramsey. I just have a question about, do we have an estimate for how many kids we think next year will go charter out?
Currently, we have 106 that are out. That's up from about 70, 75 last year. And we have budgeted 115 total. So any more than 115, then we're going to be over our budget. So we continue to monitor that. Mr. Winters is providing us updates each month where we are. But that's a big drain. That's about, you know, $1.2-1.3 million going out.
Do those numbers generally come in at the last minute? You find out about those right at this part?
Yeah, they're continually changing. I mean, it's kind of right now, it's been pretty steady, but there probably won't be a lot till the summer if it changes.
I have been trying now for several years to tease out patterns, threads of information, and there's no pattern. In fact, we kids are coming and going during the school year as well. It's not like they make a decision at the end of the school year. It's really hard to pin down. Sometimes it's students who are in public school and other school districts come here and never give us a chance because they've had it or whatever, or something happened in the previous school. It's a little bit of everything. That's not to say we're not going to try to address it. I think we will probably come to the board with a recommendation to at least consider hiring a consultant or a marketing consultant for a fixed number of hours to try to actually actively go after families and try to bring them back and make sure folks understand what it means to be in a cyber charter school, because I don't think people do. The other thing that's happening, and we'll have to pay close attention to it as well, is I do believe the General Assembly is going to take some action on this matter. I think they're going to bifurcate at least the reimbursement that school districts have to put out. So the General Assembly is this issue has climbed pretty close to the top, just below the fair funding, really, in terms of topics being discussed. So it could be a moot point or a mooter point, if that's a word, in a year or two, because the amount we pay out may be significantly less.
And just Dr. Hofstra hit on a really good point. In the governor's budget, if you recall, he actually was setting a price per student for regular education in cyber school based on the average across the state of $5,850. We're currently paying, based on our costs, just about $9,500. Mm-hmm. So you can see the big disparity between cyber and bricks and mortar. And we're probably one of the lower third, maybe. There's other districts that are higher. So he's trying to get, if that would go through, that would greatly decrease our costs without going into that.
Regarding the governor's budget, again, I was at the PASA Board of Governors last week, and folks are pretty much saying there won't be a budget on time, and they're now actually using the term winter as the time we may find out, and they were not being facetious. So we can't count on the state to provide funds for this year. It's not good. I mean, and understandably so. It's an enormous change what the governor's recommended and where he is from where the majority party are sitting. So it's going to be quite a show.
And the biggest thing in the health of the room as well is the teachers. So it needs to be some pension reform as well. So they got a lot of things to tackle.
The under local revenue, the real estate taxes, is that a combination of increase in property and transfer, or is that just transfer?
That's just the property assessment.
The property assessment,
correct.
Do we have a projection on the transfer tax?
It's up. It's up from previous. So as we get closer to the year, I'd like to make some adjustments to that.
Okay.
But as you know, it's up and down, and you're trying to get too aggressive. But I think we've kept it pretty much the same for the last couple of years. I think
right.
There could be a small increase there as well. So I'll keep an eye on that. I can bring all that to our next meeting.
We've had a couple of large industrial developments where land was taken out of agricultural.
Exactly.
Is that reflected in here? Or is that
not yet.
That's to come.
Yeah, there's
until
one.
The county gets
up.
Right.
Correct. Until the county gets out and assesses it.
They'll do an interim tax bill on that.
Correct. Yep. Exactly.
Those are looking, that projection is looking decent. There's a huge building they put up. You can see that out on 23.
Yeah, there's a couple of districts.
A couple more in town here.
This is actually our current taxable assessment as of April 1st.
Okay.
With some reduction for that outstanding assessment appeal.
Are they, they're still on track for, is it 2017 for the reassessment?
I haven't heard anything different, so I'm hoping that doesn't, again, kick the can down the road, because you need to get that reset and equalized from a revenue perspective. So a couple things going on. I mean, this is our last meeting before next month, when we have our proposed final. And again, we'll have our final budget in June, so we can make changes.
Do you want us to weigh in on what we think this point, or are you going to wait?
We would like to have that. I mean, in our minds, we're looking somewhere around the 1.92% of the index, but that means spending some of the money that we've squirreled away for Pacers and bringing that onto the table. But we would like to get a target sort of in place so that we can work through it at this point.
Yeah. Well, I guess, in my opinion, would be we keep it at the index. We use the technology piece with, what, $240,000-some we have, $1 million in reserve. We use all of that. I mean, yeah, fully fund that and then use the balance for the Pacers to keep it.
That's a lot of what Dr. Collins heard. And yeah, he and I were kind of talking about it, getting that base index to give us that little growth, and then use some of the fund balance, whether it be Pacers, technology combination, especially in light of not knowing what the state budget looks like.
Are we in the crest of the wave on the Pacers, or are we still going?
We have one more big increase.
One more.
Next, the 16-17 is going to be in excess of 29%. And then it's small increases until we level out at about 33%. And after about 15 years of that rate, then we start dropping down. So we've got this year and then the following year, so 2 years to get to more reasonable increases.
I guess it'd be interesting to hear what other board members think as well. Any other questions?
I apologize if this was covered before, but the part about Kathy Coons and the home school visit, was that position, how much time was that, and how we're eliminating it, how is that being absorbed? Or
it was a full-time position. We do have another licensed social worker, Mindy Menard, and Kathy has been out for most of this year. Mindy has taken over some of, or most of those duties that Kathy had as well. Some of our counselors have taken on some more of those roles, and with the addition of school psychologists, that will again be readjusted to make sure that we cover everything that Kathy used to do.
Okay. Thank you.
I agree with Glenn, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll move into the program committee then.
The program committee has one action item for next week, and that is an affidavit of guardianship for a student that is living in our school district. Any questions about the action item? Then I'm going to go over here. I do have a brief presentation on changes at the elementary level. And Kara's going to help me by picking up some handouts for everybody in the audience. This is a follow-up on our discussions over the summer and some of the things we talked about in the fall concerning the elementary level and what we were looking at to make sure we continue to grow at that level. I'm going to be looking at Jeff every time to get him to change. Just a review of assessment, SPP, and teacher evaluation. Our state assessments are the PSSAs, grades 3 through 8, and they start tomorrow. They will be for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings for the next 3 weeks at the elementary level and at the middle school. Keystone exams are Algebra 1, Literature, and Biology. Those are taken at the end of courses at the high school level. Unless students take Algebra 1 at 8th grade, then they will be taking them at the end of 8th grade. Just a reminder that the SPP is the School Performance Profile, and that was developed by PDE to provide information and resources about the school district. If you you all have this handout in your packet, and this is revised since we talked in the summer about what comprises the SPP. The major changes are that English language arts is now combined, which is writing and reading. We used to have a reading assessment and a writing assessment. It's now combined, and if you look at the academic achievement, the second line down, it says English language arts literature. That's 15% now of the overall academic achievement, whereas before it was 7.5. And the other big piece is on the back page, indicators of academic growth. Once again, since it's a combined test, the second row down, English language arts literature is worth 20% of that overall 40% in making up the SPP.
What's worth noting and still is significant, while, and because I had Dr. Larkin make copies specifically for you with this and for audience member, well, member, thanks for coming. Everyone else works with this. So thank you. You have a community representative. So what's important to understand, and I remind the board, is while the school performance profile, when it came out, was a step forward in terms of how schools are held accountable, because prior to that, it was just PSSAs, and that's it. It's still very heavily laden with PSSA information. If you take a highlighter, which I've done as an exercise, and highlight all of the categories of the matrix that say PSSA, two-thirds of this is going to be colored. So while it was a step in the right direction to start looking at other things like AP participation and graduation rates, the PSSAs still are a dominating factor in terms of what schools are being held accountable to do. It's frustrating. And it's why we're looking at some new things, and Dr. Larkin is going to talk about that, our STEM initiative, and the initiatives that our educational foundation do are an attempt to try and counter the unbalanced pressure that we all have related to this school performance profile. In addition to the profile, individuals are held accountable individually, both the principals and the teachers, and that's why I asked her to send this pie chart out. You've seen this before, you've seen it many times for years, but it's worth noting that the reason we have this what many folks believe, including myself, an overemphasis on these important but not the totality of the things that we do in schools is because we're being driven there by our state and federal government. So with that introduction, I'll let Dr. Larkin talk about what we're doing to try and work these important areas, but also some other things as well. Sorry.
No problem. So like Dr. Hollister said, overall, you can see the percentages that each of these areas on this rubric here count for, totaling for 100% of the SPP. Which if you look at this pie chart, this is the teacher effectiveness system. This is what our evaluation for teachers is. If you look, that building level data, 15% of their evaluation is based on that SPP. In addition, an additional 15%, which is teacher specific, also has pieces of the PSSA achievement in it, as well as PVAS growth. And then there's IEP goals and objectives and a small piece that the LEA, which is us, can figure out what needs to be addressed in that area. So approximately 29 to 30% of a teacher's evaluation is based on those tests that they're taking this week, as is the principals. And most importantly, it's the students that are taking those tests. If you look at the next slide, this just also shows you the principal effectiveness system, which once again speaks to the 15% SPP score. So as a reminder, the SPPs in 13-14 at the elementary level were Blue Ball Elementary had a 90.9, Bergnock was at 88.9, and New Holland was at 80.8. So when we met last year, and then again in the summer, you asked us to look at what the overall, we looked at the overall picture. We took the newest information that we had from last year's 13-14 PSSA, and this was our overall picture. We discussed this last summer. Achievement since 2009 is flat. All grade levels, English language arts, got between 66 and 73% proficient. Math was between 75% and 83% proficient. Growth since 2009, our basic and below basic groups had above average growth. Our proficient students had an average growth, and our advanced students had below average growth. When we're talking average growth, we're talking a year for a year. Okay? That was the overall picture, but there were some bright spots. And so that's what we were looking for. It wasn't across the board in every single class and in every single grade that it was all flat or, you know, not making the growth that we were looking for. So we looked at that data and we looked at those grades. And specifically in grades 3 and 4 at Blue Ball and grade 6 at Brecknock, there were differences in specifically, in this case, the math scores. Those grade levels had higher levels of achievement and higher levels of growth than grades that did not group, because in those three grades, they were grouping for instruction.
Can you say that again?
In 3rd and 4th at Blue Ball and 6th at Brecknock, in math, those grade levels were grouping for instruction. So that meant that those students, they looked at their data and they moved them into groups and taught more homogeneously grouped students. Okay? They also, in those grade levels, no matter what teacher was teaching, they all taught the same curriculum. There was not a change in what was being taught in the classroom. What was being changed was the instruction. So the expectations were still being held at a high level. They were consistently expecting all students to work, and they were committed to that as a teacher. And the teacher made sure the students knew that. So no matter what group they were in, the expectations for learning were high.
Is there a way we could make sure that the parents and teachers that were here last month that had concerns about this would get a copy of this and a copy of what you're telling us right now to give the real picture of what is happening and not what some thought was happening, which is the actual reverse of what is happening? It would be really nice to get this information into their hands so they could see how nicely this is working.
We will do that. We'll make sure. So, with this information, these are the steps that we took during the 14-15 school year. Students are flexibly grouped for English, language arts, and math in most classrooms. Not all classrooms have gone this way, but most of them have, using STAR reading and math assessments and pre-unit assessments in math. Our STAR reading and math assessments are universal screenings that we do 3 times a year. And then we also have quarterly progress monitoring checks of the using those assessments as well. These groups, and I can't stress this strongly enough, are flexible groups, okay? It's based on data, and those groups are changed as appropriate with that data. No students are tracked. I graduated in 1977. And we had, you know, those college-bound kids, the business-level kids, the Botec guys, and you know, I was in section 8P at Capelli Pro Middle School. That was almost the top, because 8T was the absolute top. But that was really tracking. I mean, you were in there and you stayed in there. That is not what this is. These students are assessed in reading quarterly. And then also, now that we have the new math curriculum with pre- and post-test assessments, we pre-assess every student when a new unit in math happens, and the groups are changed according to that. So students are not in a group and kept there. We look at their readiness each quarter or each unit, and we make changes as necessary. Okay? The curriculum, we also made sure that it stays the same in all classrooms. It's the instruction that varies. The readiness level of a student to understand material means that we need to change how we instruct. It may be that we use more manipulatives in math. It may be that it's a little longer, a specific topic is covered. Or more importantly, it may be that this student has already learned this, and I'm not gonna sit through this again because Sally beside me doesn't know it. Or this is the unit that we're on, and so we walk lockstep through it. That's not where we're going.
Mind if I make a comment?
Mm-hmm.
So after the last board meetings, I started reading some peer-reviewed white papers on homogeneous versus heterogeneous tracking. This is really interesting to me. Kind of confirms, a lot of them say we need more data, but the common thread amongst most of the articles I read was that the closer the groups are, the better your response is, right? So if you have a really high-performing group, and a low performing, there's really not much movement from bringing the low. You know, there's not that peer-to-peer learning. But if the groups are closer, then you see that upward mobility, right? So if you're changing these students real-time through this data, it reflects that what these papers are proposing, that the closer you can get those groups, you do get peer-to-peer learning, and you do see up the mobility.
Yes. Okay. As I said, we also this year revised our math curriculum. We took what we had, but we really aligned it with state standards, and we made units instead of chapters. So the teachers still have our program, which we've used for many, many years, Everyday Math, that they can pull from, but they aren't going through chapter one and moving, and chapter two and moving. We provided time over the summer for teachers to work in grade level teams to develop lessons to go with these units, to review materials purchased or researched by the district, and then in the fall, once again, to look at the pre- and post-assessments. And we are going to be doing this again in the summer, taking some of this information and tweaking this. Curriculum should not be a stagnant, we've written it, this is how we're going to do it forever and ever, amen. It needs to be a living, breathing document, and we need to continue to look at it and review and make sure it's meeting the needs of our students. We also did a literacy audit, which was conducted by IU13 for grades kindergarten through three. We had a revision of our English language arts curriculum. We also bought the Reading Street program. We saw a slight uptick in our scores after that, but not significant score. So we have some of these things in places, so what we did was bring in outside eyes to look at what was happening in our literacy program. We expect those results in June, and planning to address the needs that are identified by that audit will happen over the summer and the beginning of next school year. We also implemented rotational learning in grades 1 through 6. Some of you may know this as hybrid learning, but we call it rotational learning. And it was implemented in the middle school 3 years ago. There has been a very strong increase in achievement and growth seen at the in seventh grade math, where it started. Last year was in eighth grade math, and there was a slight increase from the previous year. And this year it was implemented in seventh grade ELA and will be implemented in eighth grade next year. Data from other elementary schools and other districts show strong growth in, and achievement with this model. Specifically, Spring City Elementary, which is an entire school. Now, they have one grade or one class per grade level, but they've seen a very significant increase at the elementary level, as has Pittston Area School District. I have to tell you that when I first took over this job 3 years ago, it was kind of like, okay, we're doing hybrid, and I'm like, okay. But I have drank the Kool-Aid on this. And I believe very strongly that this is a good way to integrate the technology that we have invested very strongly in our district, and also provide good, strong instruction for our students. Rotational learning, as I have up here, consists of centers. We've done centers at the elementary level forever and ever. It's not anything new. What this is a much more focused instructional design for those centers. At the independent center, students usually are working on computer-aided instruction on the computer, that teachers can be very specific about targeting for individual students. Not everybody gets on at the same place. Most of the programs that we have for students are leveled when I say, like, achieve 3,000, they've done reading, the students have read on it, and they can, and the computer then adjusts the reading level for them so that it's at an independent pushing instructional level, because they need to be working on it independently, but it also pushes them to continue to grow. And we've seen some really fantastic Lexile level growth throughout the year. I'm going to be really excited this June to do a presentation on this, or I'll let Greg do it, because he can really tell you all the ins and outs of the data. But we're seeing some really good growth with these programs. Also, another center is a collaborative center, where they get to work with their peers on projects and things that are tied to the content that they're working on in the classroom. This is one of the hardest centers, because we don't have a whole lot of projects yet. We're spending some time really researching different good, strong projects. But this is an area also that I think is very important. So that's what rotational learning is. It's the old centers on steroids.
To me, what's interesting about this is, after seeing a couple of kindergarten classes that do small group learning, right? It's just like you said, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before the kids were doing this, and then we take them out of that and then reintroduce it to them later. Mm-hmm. Well, then why? And the kindergartners I saw doing it were actually doing it very well.
Yeah. And, you were at Blue Ball, right?
Yeah. And it was.
Becky Mills gets them moving.
And as soon as I saw it, I said, this is hybrid learning.
Yeah.
I didn't know this vernacular rotational learning. So if I buy a Prius now, do I have to call it a rotational?
Yeah.
Stick to your day job.
Okay. So what does our data show us so far after these changes? Well, last year our ELA achievement in the fall was 69%. And in the winter, we had increased 3% to 72%. This year, our fall achievement data was 61%. Winter, it's at 70%, for an increase of 9%. Our growth last year from fall to winter had a student growth percentile of 63. An average percentile growth would be 50. So that was still pretty strong. However, this year, from fall to winter, our SGP was 73. And if you look at math, there. Thank you. If you look at math, last year in the fall, our achievement was 74%. Our winter achievement was 84%, which was a 10% increase. This year in fall, we started at 71%, and our winter achievement was at 83% for an increase of 14%. Our math growth in the fall was to winter was had an SGP of 57. This year we had an SGP of 67. So I'm not saying that this is the silver bullet, that this is everything that will have, that will bring us all the things we need, but at least half a year into it, it seems to be working for moving us in the right direction. So what does that mean for 15-16? As Keith talked about, we do have an increase in our technology budget, and that is to make sure that all elementary students, grades 1 through 6, have a computer. Kindergarten will continue to have desktops, along with PALs, computer on wheels for whole group assessment. Rotational learning that was implemented in grades 1 and 6 will be grades 1 through 6. Our 2nd through 5th grade teachers have already had 1 day of training, and they'll have 2 more over the summer. We will do a literacy audit on our grades 4 through 6. And then flexible grouping will continue in grades 1 through 6. I have a list there of some of the tweaks that the principals are working with teachers to address, areas of concern. I look at this and I think a lot of these are adult issues more than student issues. They are just things that the adults need to work out because this is a change. For the most part, teachers are used to having students all day long in their elementary classes, and the students are used to that, to be truthful. Not having that at times has caused some concern and some upset. So principals are working on that, but what they aren't working on is that we're not going to do this. We are going to do this. And finally, we've heard from you, we've heard from the elementary teachers, from the principals, that science has definitely taken a hit when it comes to instructional time because of the focus on literacy and on mathematics. So as Keith alluded to in his budget presentation, we are going to have a STEM special. It will take the place, it will be the 5th special, and it will take the place of the computer labs. I've written there the vision of the program is to provide an educational environment where students work independently and in collaborative groups to solve real world problems. Those that are present now and those that are in the future. So Mr. Jones's Prius will be able to go a whole lot further on his battery than it does now, because our STEM kids, our kids in their STEM classes in the elementary are going to be working on that problem. In the STEM classes, we'll also be looking at making sure we touch on the careers and occupations that these types of science and technology and engineering touch on. We'll also be looking at extended long collaborative projects. We will be integrating computer instruction into this class as well. I'm not looking at this class as being a how-to necessarily class with a computer, but definitely how you use the computer to enhance instruction and to enhance the student's ability to demonstrate knowledge. So we will continue to change. We're not ever going to stay stagnant. We can't. We need to make sure we're educating students for their lives, not our lives. And so we're going to be working on meeting all the needs for our students. Any questions?
makes perfect sense to me, and thank you for the presentation. Touching on what Mr. Jones said, like, the parents that were here, we discussed some of the reasons that that might have occurred, but it would be great if some of them were sitting in the audience tonight, but they didn't know that this was maybe going to be done.
We got one here.
Yes, here. Thank you. Yeah, so I'm not going to minimize that you're here, and thank you for that. But, I mean, we can put it on the website, but I think it would be really good and really show a spirit of taking your concerns seriously, and what if we could somehow, I don't know if we have a record, I guess, of who all was here and who spoke, but I don't know. I just think it's important that we get information out, because when it was brought up, I admittedly didn't fully understand what was being brought up. And now, having seen this presentation, I feel like that answers a lot of the concerns.
I believe we do know who was here last week or last month. So we can make sure those parents get it. We'll also make sure that it gets out to the teachers that this was presented, and principals as well. And that ends my report.
All right. And a very good report, Mayor.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Good. And we'll continue to look forward to hearing implemented and the success of management.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple of items. One of them I'd like to take action on right now, if I could, would be the approval of graduation for Friday, June 5th. I believe that's a 6:30 start. This works out really well on a Friday night for parents and planning. It also works out well because of what we need to do during the school day here. It's a half day for students, so it gives us time to get everything ship-shape and ready to go for our graduates. In the event that we would lose additional school days this year for some reason, we would not be in any great jeopardy, because we do have the longest school year in the county at 182 school days. You're required to have 180 by law, so we actually do have a two-day cushion at this point. So I am asking you to approve graduation so that folks' families can begin planning, because those plans are already underway and getting those phone calls. So I would like to see someone make a motion.
Very well. We have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Thank you.
The graduation is set.
We're ready to go. That's cool. The other information, actually two other information items I've added one since. 7.2, we are basically in a holding pattern regarding the volunteers and the police checks, and who constitutes a volunteer and what police checks need to be held. It's all over, and there's some pushback now in Harrisburg, so we're hoping to get some clarification on, you know, who is a volunteer and what are the requirements. I have a letter ready to go to families, to parents. I'm holding that letter so that we don't have to recant everything after some changes take place. My thought is that the last minute would be late May, when I have to send that letter out so that folks can make plans this summer if they intend to volunteer. We're going to go with that letter with the best information available at that time and hope that we're pretty close. I think the longer we wait to make policy changes and announce this information to parents, the better off our decisions will be, or the closer our decisions will be to what's most in line with what's happening in Harrisburg. So that's just an update. Most of the school districts are doing something similar, sort of holding until the last minute to really lay down the new rules, although it's still looking very likely that our volunteers are going to have to spend a lot of money to volunteer. I just don't see a way around that. What really is the big question is, what constitutes a volunteer? And that's still sort of a gray area, of course. So that's the update on that. The last thing I just wanted to share, to my knowledge, I think this is the first year, I don't recall for sure, but this is the first year that we've had two parents opt their two students out of the PSSA exams this year. That's sort of a bigger issue in other areas. We haven't had a major issue. I would say this year,
I had about a half dozen inquiries saying, how does that work? And about a half dozen parents, maybe eight parents, came in and looked at the exam. And after that, only two opt-outs officially made the request of me to opt out, which if they provide the right rationale, I am required by law to do. So I just thought it was interesting. PSSA starts tomorrow. So we did have two families who we decided not to have their children participate. Both of them were in third grade, so I would expect that that would probably continue. Any comments or questions on that?
And how does that affect our score? Do they not count at all?
That's a good question. I don't know. How does it work?
They count against us.
They count against us.
As if they didn't take it.
Yeah, because part of this score is how what percentage of your students who are supposed to take the PSSAs takes it. So, you know, if a significant number of that of students start doing that, it will hurt the school district scores.
I'm surprised it's not more.
I am too.
It's all over the media.
Yeah, people are really pushing it.
Like vaccines.
I think the folks who have expressed concern, the principals have brought them in and said, you know, there's pros and there's cons. Here are some of the pros. We understand the cons. I mean, you know, my daughter starts to take them tomorrow. I get it. Although she's excited. She's not like her dad was. She's excited because they get no homework always. So that's all she's. That's where her head really is. She's like, Daddy, no homework all week, so she'll take the exam. So she's weighing herself, the pros and cons of PSSA, and they get food too, I guess.
They get snacks.
Good. They get snacks, so it's all good in their world. So, I do think the General Assembly. Well, I know for a fact there are some groups who are trying to push back on that and expand again, trying. We do so much in schools for kids, and what's measured in PSSA is important. I'm not going to deny it. It is important stuff, but there's a whole lot of other things that we do that if we're going to measure this, we ought to measure that too. It would be my fault. Or measure everything a little bit less. I know I'm working with someone who was the task force chair for the school profile, and I'm trying to talk to her about some other possibilities, and the ears are open on that. So I do think that we may pull back a little bit from the pressure that the PSSA exams and the focus on the PSSA exams in the coming years. At least I'm optimistic to that. The only other thing I have, we do need an executive session for a number of matters, personnel, a student-related matter, and some contract negotiations. That would be the three reasons for an executive session that could be noted in the minutes. Other than that, that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Any other questions on the superintendent's report? Any other comments or for the board? I have no more motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned.